from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
You know, Ursula, looking at this text line during the break, it's interesting, and I want to share it because I think it's very important that I share it. And I don't know if you guys were listening to our last segment on We Need to Talk at 9:45, is when we were basically talking about what's going on with the San Jose Sharks goalie who refused to wear the Pride-themed warm-up. And on the text line, in response to what I said, half the text line loves me, and half the text line can't stand me. Or I wouldn't say can't stand me, but they just totally strongly disagree. And I just want to say that right there proves my point. I am looking forward to the day that everyone in our society is accepted for who they are. Because the same folks that are against this, you guys do know that people used to justify people of darker skin being bad because of the Bible. Do I need to go into the Cain and Abel story? Oh, let me guess. Some of you guys think I didn't go to school learning about this stuff at all. So again, there used to be a time when it was illegal for interracial marriages. There used to be a time where it was segregation. There used to be a time where people were not. Watch this, y'all. You're not going to believe this. There used to be a time that people weren't accepted for the color of their skin. Think about that for a second, y'all. So the fact that in 2023 that we have people still not accepting of others in our community, I don't know what to tell you. I think it's a sad thing. And I think if I was talking right now in 1943, right now, I'd be saying the same thing. Well, actually, I wouldn't. I wouldn't even be on the radio. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. I actually think that you probably could be saying the same thing in 2030, 2040. I mean, there's always going to be disagreement. And I just want to point out, a bunch of text messengers brought up points such as, for example, Nerio in Puyallup said, gee, I just listened to you on this whole love your neighbor thing. It was beautifully said, but you should apply that to yourself. Last year, you said something that really got to me. You said you would never hire someone with tattoos on their face. You were judging and not giving that person a chance. Love them as well. Those tattoos mean nothing. Love you, bro. I mean,
go ahead. You say it for me. You say it for me. Go ahead.
Nope. Say, I'm going to let you say it.
No. Well, if you're looking at the camera right now, at the camera, I'm pointing at all of my tattoos.
You do have tattoos. So does that mean it's okay, though, for you to say that you wouldn't hire someone because they have a tattoo?
I don't even remember what the context of it.
Or others were saying, gee, you don't give that same grace when it comes to someone who is conservative or a Republican that.
What do we do it every Friday? What do we do every Friday at 10 o'clock?
Exactly. We have Michael Medved on the show.
Okay, so first of all, tattoos are a choice. Second of all, you would be making a business decision there. You would not be making a personal moral decision on the character of that individual. You'd be saying, my customers might not be comfortable with it. Third, let's see, conservatives and Christians are not oppressed in this country, period. They have not been, I don't know, hunted down and killed like gay people, restricted Correct. From accessing public life, having to hide their identity for their entire life. It was illegal for them to get married and until extremely recently. There's no comparison. I'm sorry.
I have an ask before you move on.
Okay.
Here's an ask. I challenge, because what ends up happening is that like text messages come through and it usually are the same talking points. I challenge you to come up with new talking points. And by the way, if you guys are going to judge G. Scott, let me be the first to tell you, I got a lot wrong with me, y'all. You know what I mean? I got a lot wrong with me. But I tell you what, it's not wrong with me. If you were born into this world, now, if you made decisions, you know, decisions that I don't like, I'll call those things. But if you are part of the LGBTQ community, and that's you, and by the way, I'm not, But at the same time, they're people that are.
Yeah.
If you're part of this community, that community. If you're, okay, and even if you decide to be a conservative, like, I don't know if you guys know this, but I have, there's, depending on the topic, I might be conservative right with you. Too far on this tangent on this topic. I just believe that, you know, there's a lot of people that's like saying, well, gee, you did. Don't judge me. I'm just, hey, I'm not really that good. But when it comes to people, I love people. And I don't think that anyone should feel less than in this country because they don't fit the role and the narrative that you think that they should. Everybody should belong.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Okay, we're going to get into this now. Because another city is trying to outlaw public drug use and camping, and that is the city of Lakewood. If passed, this law would say that use of any dangerous drug in public or disposal of paraphernalia could become a crime. So anyone caught camping overnight in public or using drugs in public would receive a misdemeanor punishable by a maximum sentence of 90 days in jail and or a fine of up to $1,000. As you know, Tacoma recently passed a camping ban within 10 blocks of shelters. Kent recently passed a camping ban, and Marysville passed an ordinance criminalizing public drug use. Do you notice a trend with all these different cities? What's happening?
Yeah, they're trying to stop drug use on the streets, and they're trying to, you know, since we're talking about the city of Lakewood, and we're talking about, now we're down in my neck of the woods, Ursula. On my ring, on the, you're going to learn this, on the ring deal, there's a community, right? And those listening right now, you know what I'm talking about. And on your ring, you have it set to a square radius of square miles of what you want. You know, so when people say, oh, somebody tried to break into my car. Oh, somebody tried to do this and all that stuff. Down south, Ursula, it's bad. It's bad right now. This one lady, they said they tried, she sent it. I mean, it's not like it's her opinion. She sent it to where they have tried to steal her car 6 times in the last 6 months. Nick, do you know what you would do if somebody tried to steal your car 6 times in 6 months? Anyways, my point is yes, these cities are trying to really do the best that they can and getting to the bottom of this stuff because it's getting bad.
Well, so when you say
it's getting bad.
I think all these different cities are showing they are hearing the public say, we are tired of this. We're not okay with this. The pendulum was swinging and it went way too far in terms of decriminalizing everything, being okay with camping just recently. Yeah. And so all these cities are trying to toughen up their laws after kind of letting a lot of these things go. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, though, because I'm in favor of it. I'm in favor. And not that I want to criminalize homelessness, not that I want to, you know, criminalize simple possession or if someone has a drug addiction. But whatever we're doing right now is not working. And I think that it was actually a Danny Westneat column again. He looked into drug court. And it does help that if you have a combination of the ability to basically hold someone accountable. So, you know, make it a crime if you do this in public, you do the drug use in public or you're, you know, basically trespassing. But given another option, a drug diversion court or something, I think that is like the best combo.
Yeah.
Because it basically holds people accountable, but also gives them an incentive to go through drug court and try to make better of themselves. And if they do that, then they are able to, you know, not have the conviction on their record. Because you talked about, you know, get one conviction that can be, you know, very difficult in a lot of ways if you're trying to get yourself back on your feet.
Yeah.
Why are we saying this right now? And why is it taking so long for any attorney to have the wits to come up with a legal strategy to implement something like this? Because there's a court decision that says you can't move people along without offering them shelter. Okay, well, we've been told that, you know, nobody wants to go into shelter. So that is a license for police to go around or whatever team you have and say, hey, you can't camp here. Would you like a shelter referral? No, thanks. Okay, move along. It's as simple as that. As to why this law is being passed about using drugs in public, Washington's public intoxication law only deals with alcohol. And there's a statute on the books about where you can and cannot use marijuana, but there's nothing about actual drugs. Because when the law was written, it was basically booze. So cities are saying, yeah, public drug use is a problem. And I have no issue with cities passing this because, let's face it, we are not returning to an era of mass incarceration, period. And anytime you hear someone say, hey, you know what, we can't arrest our way out of this, you're absolutely right. We also can't treat our way out of this with the current level of facilities. So you're going to see this turntable of people going to drug court, being referred to a treatment center that may or may not exist, dropping out of that treatment if they go, because it takes like six times, right, before someone actually can kick the drugs. And then they'll go to jail for a little while, and it'll be a revolving drawer. But it's not going to be mass incarceration. And I am happy that these cities are doing it. But I'm also telling you, be careful what you wish for. Because what happens if Seattle does this? What happens if everyone gets their wish and Seattle starts enforcing a public camping ban and criminalizing the use of drugs in Seattle?
I know where you're going
with this. Then where do all those people go?
I know where you're going with this.
They're coming to your town.
Hey, I knew you were going there. That's a very good point, Ursula.
Well, where are they going? They're already going to other towns. I mean, I just listed all the different cities that are trying to come up with these ordinances.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rousting solution. This is not a solution to the problem. It is, hey, you know what? We're going to make it uncomfortable for you to be here. You're going to have to move around if you want to have a tent here. And if you're caught using drugs in public, you're going to have a pain in the neck to go through with the court process and probably treatment. So we're going to harass you out of our city somewhere else. And if that works for those cities, great. But it's also going to go to the neighboring ones, and just watch what happens if Seattle pursues something.
Yeah,
like this.
And I would just argue they're already existing in the other ones, which is why they're trying to put these laws on the books. I'm in favor of not just letting anything go as we have been.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ursula. I think that we can all agree on that. And is it fair to say that for far too long, they let this get out of hand for far too long? Because like Chef said, you can't treat your way out of this because we don't have enough facilities. And for far too long, did the drug problem just start yesterday? No. This drug problem that we're talking about has been going on for years. So again, I keep asking this question. Why don't we have the drug facilities to help with that? We have gotten behind on that for far too long.
Yes, and they are trying to correct that, but it's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
Okay, something that just hit overnight is the news that Amazon is laying off another 9,000 workers. And I was looking like, man, I mean, I keep seeing like big numbers when it comes to layoffs involving Amazon. And yeah, that was 18,000 layoffs were announced in January, so now we're talking 27,000 overall. And according to GeekWire, these cuts are going to happen in Amazon's web services, people experience and technology, advertising, and their Twitch divisions. So all in all, about 140,000 tech workers at 500 different companies have been laid off just this year alone. That's just hard to wrap your brain around.
It really is. And one of the things that I have been saying that I think it was is I think that the tech industry was kind of in front of what we are possibly dealing with, the possibility of a recession, the possibility, you know, we talk about inflation, we talk about all the things economically that's going on. Some of these companies, like big companies like Amazon or whoever else, are getting out in front and trying to make these moves. And then when you wonder when they do hire back, because there's going to be a time that I assume that they'll hire back. When they do, will they hire back at the same pay rate?
I'm going to guess the answer to that is no. But just think of how long. I mean, even with our sons, mm-hmm. when we were trying to talk to them about, hey, you know, what are you interested in doing? Do you remember the day when you'd always say, God, you can't go wrong if you go into tech. You can't go wrong. You can't, you know, you want to do, become a software engineer. You know, luckily or unluckily for both our boys, we're like, yeah, that's not how my brain works. And they went into different things. And right now they have jobs and that's great. But I just never thought I would see the day when we're talking about this level of layoffs in that industry.
I agree.
But speaking of things not going well. The second largest bank failure in U.S. history happened, apparently, according to employees, because many employees were working remotely. That's what Silicon Valley Bank employees told the Financial Times last week. I sent you guys this story because this was from Axios, that they interviewed a bunch of the people who worked there, and they were saying, well, you know, although the company really bragged about its flexible culture on their site, it said, if our time working remotely has taught us anything, it's that we can trust our employees to be productive from wherever they work. Well, apparently that's not what the employees thought, because they basically said that productivity went down when they were working remotely. The executive team at SVB was spread out all around the country. The CEO himself, Greg Becker, would be at times working from Hawaii. And so they basically included in this report, they included remote work as a risk to business in their 22 annual report, because they admitted that IT issues were an issue when they were working away from the building. And then also they couldn't keep track of productivity. Does any of this come as a surprise to you?
No. I mean, I'd love to ask, who works harder, bank executives or the tellers and branch managers inside of the banks? I'll answer it. The bank tellers and the branch managers inside the banks, they work harder than those bank executives, and we continue to see. Sorry.
Well, I just found it interesting that they were blaming, the employees now were blaming remote work, even though that was touted as one of the big things about this particular bank.
I'm not shocked. You're not shocked, are you?
No.
All right. Hey, coming up next here on... Whoa. Are we going canceling spring break? Oh, I didn't... Wrong page. Did the legislature whiff in failing to pass a cap on rental increases? We discuss that next. Gene Ursula.
It's 10:33, and you are listening to the G and Ursula Show. It's only Monday, and already G is ready to make some apologies, apparently.
Well, yes. yes, I am. There's some bank executives that hit me up and says, G, you have no idea. People texting in, their family are bank executives. So I'm going to take this time to apologize for suggesting that bank tellers and branch managers work harder than bank executives. I don't want to just tell you where that came from. You see, sometimes I MC a lot of events, and some events I do some events on the golf course. And when I do these events on the golf course and everything, for some reason at these events, it's never bank tellers that I meet.
So based on that alone,
during,
you came to the conclusion that they don't work.
Like during the day.
Okay.
I'm just saying, like, during the day, I don't meet the bank tellers. I meet a lot of bank executives during the day on Monday through Friday. So that's where I made a mistake, but I am willing to say I made a sweeping statement.
Yes.
I apologize to the bank executives.
Yes.
I know you guys worked hard. I know you worked hard to get that education.
That's right.
And you worked up the ranks. My bad.
Wow. Good job, G. I can tell you're being sincere, too.
I am being sincere.
I know.
No, because the one part that is true is because some people says, well, gee, you're always so against the high level and all the bosses.
You have an anti-boss or anti-CEO bias.
Right. And the reason why is because I do believe that the lowest paid people in companies work harder than everyone in the building. And so that's where that bias comes from. But I'm willing to say I was wrong for making the sweeping statement about banking executives.
Okay. Good. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. And yeah, I just want to make sure, because a lot of times when you say something, people assume I think the same thing.
You don't listen to the show that often.
You can assume one other person here concurs with you.
But hey,
okay.
But my goal now,
yes,
when I do these events,
yes,
I want to meet a bank teller at one of these golfing events that I'm at. All right, and as soon as that happens, I'm going to come on the air and tell that story,
because
I have a few golfing events coming up.
The reason why you've got banking execs or the CEOs at these events, though, is because they're the ones that are going to be schmoozing and trying to get more money and try to raise more money. And unfortunately, that's not the role. But, I think it would be really cool if, hey, why don't you make it possible for one of the people who are still in the, trenches to have those opportunities. So I love that. Okay, so here's a question. Did the legislature make a mistake when it failed to pass a proposed bill that would have capped rental increases at 7%? And the reason we're asking this is because there was a story, there was a situation that was profiled in the Daily Herald that brings this question to the forefront. And so they profiled a 72-year-old Linwood man. His name is Hal, and he has seen his rent triple since 2001. So back then, he started at, I believe it was $500 per month for a one bed, one bath unit. Today, his rent is $1,710 a month, and that leaves him with only $117 left for food, transportation, and moving costs after rent is taken out of his Social Security check. So was it a mistake? We've talked about it. We asked whether there should be a rental cap, and I think both you and I said no.
No, I don't think so. It's interesting, right? Like, and I think we need to change how we help folks. We always go right after. Right. Like, OK, let's make their housing affordable and let's make the rent cap and they should be able to afford this and make this cheaper and this. How about this? How about we supplement their income with money from like UBI, Universal Basic Income? I would love in this situation for this gentleman, Hal, in this case, to be given some income to help him with that instead of basically telling landlords what they can charge or cannot charge when it comes to rent. Because, again, I don't like how we try to pick and choose when capitalism is okay. And in this case, to pay someone paid for that house, someone's property taxes aren't capped. And the day that property taxes are capped, then maybe we could talk about maybe a rental cap. But that doesn't happen here in this state.
Yeah.
So we're on the same page.
Yeah, we are on the same page. But I'm going to point out that, for a couple of years, there was a moratorium on evictions and rent increases. So a lot of things are coming to the fore right now. And that's why we're going to hear a lot more of these stories. But conversely, we're also hearing, and in fact, the Herald also talked to some landlords that were pointed out some cases where there were landlords that were $20,000 to $40,000 in the hole because of these years of
The moratorium.
Yeah, sure. And so they weren't able to raise rent. They weren't able to collect. So now they're trying to make up for that. So there are people like Hal who are facing the possibility of being homeless. Right now he's living on Social Security. Social Security did go up.
The average is what, $1,800 a month,
exactly,
in the U.S.?
I mean, if you're only surviving on Social Security, I could just tell you right now, dealing with my parents' situation, we had to move my mom back to the Philippines because we couldn't, and she's got to live there part-time because we couldn't make it work.
Well, my question is, what are we going to do with all these people that are going to become homeless? And I can tell you just from looking at the text line, the number of people who have written into us and said, hey, I need to find a place. I'm going to be homeless in a month, in 2 weeks, yes, next week. That has risen dramatically over the last year. And this is a great article. It points out, you know, the negative impacts of the eviction moratorium. And landlords are digging out of that. Absolutely. At the same time, the article also points out that in many of these apartment complexes where rents have been skyrocketing, there have been no improvements done virtually whatsoever over the last 20 years. Now, we are either going to be in a situation where we need to be handing out checks to people who are going to fall into homelessness, or we're going to have to put a cap on how much it can be increased. And honestly, I think the cap is the way to go, and here's why. It does not limit what you can charge as a landlord. It just limits how much you can increase it. So every time you have a tenant turn over, just like in the state of California, how they lock in your property tax when you buy your home, and then it changes when it changes ownership, you can charge that new tenant however much you want. You can charge them double, triple, whatever the market can bear. But we're simply not prepared for thousands more people to become homeless when they can't afford their rent. And I've seen this in my own family with people that I know. I see it with our listeners. And I think most people, if you talk to them and you say, hey, is there anyone in your family who's had a hard time finding housing? Most people don't have the ability to, let's say, move to Olympia or move outside Spokane. What are you going to do with the person who can no longer work and is on a fixed income? We're going to be looking at many, many more people falling into this. And right now, zoning our way out of it is not a solution.
What did I say on Friday? Anybody remember what I said about this on Friday? Hole in the boat. Hole in the boat. And that's what I said on Friday. These so many people that are on their way to being homeless, Ursula. And that something that we have all these services out here for those that are unhoused. But the services for people that are on the brink, they go hidden. They go unseen.
Yeah.
What do you got, Ursula?
Well, it's just, you look at all these and there's no easy, clear answer, because it's always a balance. You affect one and then it has an impact on the other. I would still say that I would not be in favor of capping the rental increases at 7%. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a way to you know, and whether it is some form of, you know, additional support, you know, and Chef is right. You can't just say, well, then don't live, you know, in XYZ. I mean, we're talking about someone who's living in Lynnwood. Well, that's relatively cheap when we're talking about what we're looking at in Western Washington.
I'll tell you what remains consistent, Ursula. That in this country, the exploitation of poor people is big business. It's big.
Yeah, that's sad.
It's big business. And that's not an opinion. Go look at the interest rates. Go look at the the loans out there. Go look at what happens when someone who does not have a choice. Sometimes, you know, a lot of folks says, well, if you don't like it, you can just move. Well, some people can't even afford that. Coming up next on the G and Ursula Show is time for scenarios. Find out what happens when the wife embarrasses the husband out to dinner because of the amount he tips. G and Ursula. Everybody, I want to say that on this Monday morning, I've been making a lot of friends. Beautiful. Let's get to scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Let me start off by saying I always tip 20%, and in some cases, I go up to 25% when the service is amazing. And you know, at times during the pandemic, when I've had a great time and a couple drinks, 25%, no problem. But 20% is my normal. Well, my wife and I are fighting about this because on Saturday, we treated ourselves to an amazing steakhouse. Everything about the place is of best quality. It's amazing. And we had a great time. The service was good and at least as good as the other place, but not over the top. And the food was incredibly expensive. Our tab came to over $250. Well, a 25% tip on $250 would be more than $60, bringing the total to over $300. That is ridiculous. So when it came time to tip, I added 20%. That's fair. It's done. Well, It is also above the suggested 18% that folks talk about. As we were leaving, my wife picked up the receipt and noticed I had tipped 20%. She asked me about it, and I told her my thoughts, and she said we needed to add another 5%. I told her it was too late and we just should go. Well, she wouldn't hear it. She went to the hostess and said we wanted to add our tip, which meant finding our waiter and explaining it all to him. I was so embarrassed and told her how I felt on the way home. I mean, we will probably never go back to that restaurant again. So I want to know, am I wrong in this situation or is my wife right in this situation? 888-973-5476. They want to know who's wrong. Is the husband wrong or is he right? What do you got, Ursula?
I think that they should have figured this out before now having to hunt down the waitress.
Yeah.
Because now that's embarrassing. Has that ever happened in my lifetime? I will say that when we used to go out in big groups, there were some German folk in our group who were not used to tipping. You know, like 20, 25. I just remember one time in Leavenworth specifically, my brother-in-law was so upset because we added to his tip. And he was like, why do you do that? You know, that's really embarrassing. I think there just was a better way to handle it. They should have figured it out. 20% is perfectly fine. 20% on a $250 bill, I get it. And I think that the wait staff would have been very happy with 20%. So
now in Bellevue, a lot of restaurants, six or more, it's an automatic 20% on there.
Yeah, I know you hate that. Because once someone tells you you have to do something.
Yeah.
When it comes to tipping.
Yeah. Hey, chef, why do we tip? Why is the tipping stuff on us, we the customers? Why is that responsibility on us?
Some of us like the illusion of control that we have over the server, and it makes us feel like, you know, we are superior to them because we get to decide their income. I'm actually not joking. There is a legit psychological component to tipping, but, I mean, historically, it's been a way for employers to avoid paying wages to people who they don't think deserve to earn a living wage, and they make the customers do it.
Okay.
What?
Wait, what the tip for me is to show, hey, I appreciate your service.
Yeah.
I think that would be the easy answer.
It's a terrible social norm that we're all guilted into. I fall into that category myself. Not because I'm like, bang up job, here's 30%.
Seriously?
No. I mean, if I have a great experience, like, of course, I tip great. But I would rather not. I'd rather just know the cost of everything up front. But as far as embarrassing tippers, unfortunately, there are people in your life that you have to do this with. That being said, flagging down your server to give him an extra, what, $15? That was horrible.
Yes.
Never do that.
Embarrassing.
Never, ever do that.
Brother Nick, what do you got?
Well, I'm with you, G. I'm in the culture of I don't like pushing the expenses onto the customer and just having them raise the wages so we can eliminate the tipping culture. But if you're in the moment and you've already agreed in your mind that you're going to tip the person, finalize the idea and don't go back and say, hey, I want to give you more. Come on. You know, what's more embarrassing is trying to ponder and fumble with all the money and say, how much should I owe you? And then you let the waiter decide that cause.
I know that people just think, they probably just think, I'm so against tipping, and they probably think that I'm a bad tipper.
You're not a bad tipper.
I know, I'm the opposite. But I hate the tipping culture. I'll never like it. Never. As a matter of fact, the more I talk about it, the more mad I get about tipping culture, Ursula. real quick, one of our favorites, listeners, Nikki, it was her mama's birthday yesterday, so I want to say happy birthday to Vernita. Happy birthday, Mama. Coming up next here on the G and Ursula Show, by the way, Ursula, I just want you to know, we're going to do agree to disagree next. And here's my plan. My plan is to make friends in the 11 o'clock hour.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to balance it. I'm going to make friends with you and our listeners all in the 11 o'clock hour.
Yeah, this has been a tough Monday. What are we going to call Mondays? Meh. Meh Mondays.
Just make it Mondays.
All right. We do agree to disagree next. It's G and Ursula. Stop the first party.